You might take your Bible and turn to chapter 5 and chapter 12 in the book of Exodus. Chapter 5 and chapter 12. Before getting into the lesson tonight, I want to take just a moment to thank everyone who has had a part in making this 445 service successful this year. I appreciate Chris Ramey. I believe Charlie Lansdell has helped him some in coordinating the service. David Powell has been involved somewhat in that also. And we appreciate every person who has participated in the service. And just seeing the number that are here tonight, I think, lets us be reminded of how important this service has been. In fact, we are appreciative of what I believe to be one of our best years in our relationship with the students. We are so thankful that you have come to the services as you are. We are glad to have you in our services. I just wish I could call each one of you by name and greet each one of you each time you're here, and that's not possible. But I know the elders and I know the church here, and I know that we want you to be in our services and as involved as it is possible. It's just not possible to involve all of us every Lord's Day or maybe even in a longer period of time, but we certainly are all involved in our singing and in our worship. And I appreciate so much the good relationship that we have. And we'll be thinking about those of you that are leaving. And we will be anticipating those who will be returning. And I want each one of you students to know that I'll be thinking of you this week. I'll be praying for you. I'd much rather be praying for you than taking the test for you. But I'm sure that there will be many prayers that will be offered up for you, and we hope that each one of you will have the best results possible and that everything will work out in the best way that is possible for you. In the passage that was read a moment ago from Exodus chapter 5, God through Moses and Aaron said to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." Pharaoh said, "I'm not going to do it. Get back to work." And yet at the 12th chapter in verse 31, Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, "Rise up and get you forth from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Also take your flocks and your herds as you have said and be gone and bless me also." And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, "We be all dead men." Now I want you to notice what a change has taken place between chapter 5 and chapter 12. Pharaoh's telling the children of Israel to go did not take place just overnight. His willingness to tell them that did not take place just overnight. There are some very, very important events that take place between chapter 5 and chapter 12. We discussed just recently the 10 plagues that are described in those chapters. Turning of the rivers to blood, the frogs, the lice, the flies, the disease of murrain in the cattle, the disease of boils in both man and beast, the plague of hail, locusts, darkness, the death of the firstborn. And I think that all of us have some great memory of those 10 plagues and how they were involved in getting Pharaoh to change his mind. But there's something else in between these two passages to which I call our attention tonight. I like to call these the four compromises of Pharaoh. Pharaoh said, "I don't want you to go." God said, "I want you to go." In fact, God said, "I'm going to bring my people out of Egypt." Pharaoh said, "No, you're not." You know, it's not hard to understand Pharaoh's thinking if you stop and consider the situation a moment. Pharaoh had the children of Israel as his slaves and his servants. Probably at least 3 million of them. Now, I say probably because we don't know exactly how many people came out of Egypt, how many there were of the children of Israel at that time. We do know that shortly after they came out, they numbered the men that were above 20, and there were 603,550. You've just sort of looked at that and analyzed it a bit and thought of over 600,000 men above 20, and then thought of all the ones that were younger than that and all the females, the women and the girls, I would guess that there may have been as many as 3 million people. I don't think we let that sink in sometimes. I don't know how many people there are in the city of Memphis now, but I would guess that the children of Israel would fill Memphis at least 3 times. If you thought of Memphis as being a city of 1 million people, taking enough of the suburbs for that, we're talking about maybe 3 million people. And here is Pharaoh, who has these people working for him, and somebody comes in and says, I want you to let them go. You can see why he would be concerned and why he would do anything within his power to keep these people working for him. And it wasn't easy to get him to be convinced to say what he said there in chapter 12. In fact, he tried to compromise with them along the way. And as we look at these compromises, and as we think of the situation of the children of Israel in bondage and Pharaoh wanting to keep them there and God wanting to bring them out and get them started on the land of Canaan, I want to suggest to you that that's not unlike the fact that Satan wants to keep us in bondage, wants to have us as his servants. And God wants us to come out of bondage, out of Satan's bondage, being servants to him, and start living in such a way that we are on our way to the promised land. And as we discuss the lesson tonight, I want you to keep that little bit of thought in the back of your mind, because I think in that sense it is especially like what is taking place. Look first in the 8th chapter of Exodus. After 4 of the plagues have been a reality, in verse 25 of Acts 8, Pharaoh's call for Moses and for Aaron and said, go ye, sacrifice to your God in the land. Now remember, Moses and Aaron had said, we want to take the people out 3 days' journey out of Egypt to go out and worship our God and sacrifice to our God. Pharaoh now, after 4 plagues have happened, and the last 2 of these 4 were such that his magicians could not copy them, and he began to realize, I think, at least to some degree, that the power of the Heavenly Father must be involved. And so he decides that he'll try to make a deal with them. He'll try to compromise. He said, okay, you want to go worship, that's okay, but just do it here in the land. There's no need of you going out. There's no need of you going 3 days' journey into the wilderness. Just worship your God here in the land. And God, through Moses, said to him, no, that's not good enough. Well, some of the other things began to happen, and just a little bit later at verse 28, he makes a second compromise. He says, okay, I'll let you go that ye may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. Only ye shall not go very far away. First, he said, you sacrifice right here in the land. That won't work. Okay, if you've got to leave the land, then I'll let you go, but just go out to the edge of Egypt. Don't go very far away. Moses said, no, that won't work either. Well, you have the 5th plague at about verse 3 of chapter 9. You have the 6th one at about verse 10 of chapter 9. 7th one, verse 23, chapter 9. And then you come on over into the 10th chapter and look at verse 11. Well, let's go back and start at verse 8 of the 10th chapter. Moses and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he said unto them, go serve the Lord your God, but who are they that shall go? Who are you going to take with you? Moses said, we will go with our young and with our old, with our sons and with our daughters, with our flocks and with our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord. And he said unto them, let the Lord be so with you, so I will let you go, and your little ones look to it, for evil is before me. Now it's not so. Go now, ye that are men, and serve the Lord. He said, you say you want to take your families with you? I'm not going to let the little ones go, but you that are men, you go out into the wilderness and serve the Lord that you as you want to, and sacrifice as you want to, and worship as you want to. But I'm not going to let the little ones go. Just you men can go. Moses had already told him just before that that was not what he wanted. And so the eighth plague comes in verse 13, and the ninth one comes in verse 22. And then we find Pharaoh wanting to make another compromise in verse 24. He called unto Moses and said, "Go ye, serve the Lord, only let your flocks and your herds stay behind." Moses said, "No, that's not good enough. That won't work." And God said, "I've got one more plague to bring." And he brought the death of the firstborn, as described particularly in the entirety of the 12th chapter, as the children of Israel were preparing for this situation, and then as it happened in the 29th verse of the 12th chapter, it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on the throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle, except those who were under the protection of the blood that the children of Israel had put on the lintel and the doorpost. And with this tenth plague, evidently there was enough that convinced Pharaoh he wanted to get rid of them all at that time, although he tended to change his mind even later and send his army after them. But I want you to think specifically of these four compromises that we have noticed tonight. First, he said, "You worship your God here in the land." Isn't that exactly what Satan is trying to get us to do today? Why, Satan doesn't care if you claim to worship God. He doesn't care if you make a sacrifice to your God. If he can get you to live where he wants you to live and stay where he wants you to stay. If he can get you, for example, through the week to live for him, it doesn't bother him a lot that you come to services on Sunday, because he knows he's got you. He's got you in his land if you're living there. And if we look about us today, isn't there such a temptation to do just that? When we look at some of the evils and the problems that exist in the world today that are associated with Satan and his crew, and then we turn around and we see those who claim to be Christians, claim to be followers of God, living the same kind of life, involved in the same kind of drugs, drinking the same kind of alcohol, promoting the same type of abortion, promoting the idea of different lifestyles, even homosexuality, and at least participating sometimes in the sin of fornication and adultery and idolatry, and maybe promoting the idea that it's all right to steal a little bit as long as it's not very much. Just living right in there with Satan in the world, and yet indicating that we're worshiping God on a regular basis. Paul said, "Come ye out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord." In 2 Corinthians 6:17, after in verses 14 and 15, talking about what fellowship does God have with Satan? What fellowship does good have with evil? There is a distinction. There is to be a distinction. And sometimes I wonder if we make that much of a distinction in the minds of people who look at our lives and watch us. Pharaoh said, "Oh yes, if you want to worship your God, that's all right, but just stay right here in the land and do it. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness," Ephesians 5:11. Pure religion is to keep oneself unspotted from the world, James 1, verse 27. Paul said, "Be not conformed to this world." That's what Pharaoh was trying to get them to do. That's what Satan's trying to get us to do. Be not conformed to this world, Romans 12 and verse 2. So Pharaoh said, "Go ahead and worship your God, but do it right here in the land." Moses said, "No, that's not good enough." "Okay," Pharaoh said, after a little while, "I'll let you go, but don't go very far. Stay close enough where I can watch you and where I can sort of entice you to come all the way back." Does that sound familiar when we think about Satan? Satan doesn't really care for you being baptized into Christ if he can get you to sit down right inside the church and quit. if he can get you not to go very far, and especially get you to have the attitude that you want to hold on to these things that are back in the world, or at least be where you can see them and watch them, and maybe condone them in the lives of others, even though you might not participate in them yourself. Just not get very far away. In James, the 4th chapter and verse 4, there are those who are called adulterers and adulteresses, and this is not talking about physical immorality. He's talking about spiritual immorality. And he sort of says, as you read those first several verses there in James 4, that if you're going to court the world, and you're going to be involved with the world, you can't really claim to be a part of the bride of Jesus Christ. You are an adulterer. You are an adulteress. It'd be just like somebody marrying and then wanting to stay close to former girlfriends or former boyfriends, and maybe continue to keep some kind of a relationship that might very well blossom into a greater relationship. Pharaoh said, all right, go, but don't go very far. Paul said to Timothy, flee youthful lust. Don't see how close you can stay to them. See how far you can get away from them. I readily admit to you there are some temptations that are possible that I really have no idea how I would react to those temptations. I'm human just like you are. And I'm sure in every area of thought I have a breaking point just like you do. And I believe the best thing for me is to stay as far away from those temptations. And even though I know times have changed and we to some extent have to consider what's going on, I still don't feel good going into a restaurant to eat where there's a bar that I go by as I enter the restaurant. And I still don't feel good going into markets where as I stand to pay my bill, I've got to look at magazines that are indecent. In fact, there is a store or two here in town that I just don't go in. I can get what I need somewhere else because of some of these very things. And yet look at what's happening to us. We're allowing ourselves, if we're not careful, as I made a point this morning, to sort of get accustomed to these things. And I wonder about myself and about you if we're not falling into the same thing that Pharaoh wanted the children of Israel to do. He said, okay, go ahead and worship. Just don't get out there very far. Don't get very far away so I can bring you back, is what he had in mind. Well, Moses and Aaron said, no, that won't work. God said 3 days' journey into the wilderness, and that's what we've got to do. Okay, Pharaoh says, after there's been some more of the plagues that sort of got his attention and caused him to realize that he's dealing with more than he thought he was at first. In verse 11 of the 10th chapter, he said, okay, all of you men, go out there for those 3 days' journey. But don't take any of the women. You leave all your children here, and I'll see after them while you're gone. Pharaoh was a pretty smart cookie. You fathers know exactly what I'm talking about. When we had 4 children at home, if you had my children, you had me, in a sense, even if I were not there personally. And even today, though they're adults and out of the house in a sense, I'm still attached to them in such a way that if you get them into something, it's going to get my attention. Pharaoh knew that if he could keep the wives and children in Egypt, that it wouldn't really make any difference how far these men went out into the wilderness. It wouldn't make any difference how they worshiped their God. They couldn't get their wives and children out of their minds, and they'd be back. He knew what he was doing in trying to compromise. Jesus tells us that unless we're willing to deny father and mother and son and daughter and husband and wife, we're not worthy to be his disciples, in passages like Matthew 10:37. And Paul pointed out in 1 Corinthians 7:33-34, as he was trying to get people who were not married to refrain from marriage so that they might remain faithful to God in that difficult time, he said, if you're married, you're going to be interested in doing what your wife wants you to do. Or you're going to be interested in doing what your husband wants you to do. And that's to be expected, and that's not bad. He was just simply saying under these circumstances, you need to really look at what's happening and try to be as faithful to God as you can. Pharaoh knew if he could get their wives and their children, that he had them. Isn't that why we encourage Christians to marry Christians? Isn't that why we are concerned when someone who is supposed to be serving God becomes yoked, unequally yoked, whether in marriage or in some other way, with someone who is not willing to serve God? And I think there even should be some concern when a strong Christian marries a weak Christian. Because we know the problems that are there when there is a split home. We know the ties that are there, and if there's love, there will be those ties. You give me a man's family, and it won't be long till I'll have him. Many people are brought to Christ through their children. Pharaoh knew what he was doing. He said, just let me keep your kids and your wives. Moses said, no, it won't work. Well, another plague came. Pharaoh decided, I've got to do something. So at verse 24, he says, okay, you want to take your wives and children, you take them. But now listen, you leave your herds and your flocks back here, and I'll take care of them while you're gone. He knew that if he had the things that were important to the people, that he had a string where he could pull them back. Okay, you go out. Don't stay in the land. Don't stay just go. You go out your full 3 days journey, and you worship your God any way you want to, but don't take your flocks with you. Leave your flocks and your herds here. When you get our things today and our possessions under control, do you not easily control us? Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. 1 John 2:15. And I'm not totally convinced that all those things are evil. There may be some good things in the world that especially appeal to our pride of life and the pride, the lust of the eye. Certainly there are things in the world that appeal to the lust of the flesh. But there's also the other things that are not necessarily evil in and of themselves, but they appeal to us. And Satan knows if he can get control of my bank account and he can get control of my possessions, that I may not be far behind. Just like Pharaoh knew it on this occasion. We have a tendency to think about the things of this world. They're temporary, 2 Corinthians 4:18 says. And there Paul says we need to concentrate on the things that are eternal, that can go with us even past death itself. What was it that kept the rich young ruler from following Jesus? Was it not things, his possessions? You're talking about a good young man there. But his things kept him from following Jesus. What was it Jesus was talking about when he said, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven? He was talking about things. And right now, especially at times of career changes and other changes in our lives, some of these things are important. And yes, they are important. But if we don't keep them in proper focus, we can easily let Satan hold on to our things and pull us back into the world. After the 10th plague, Pharaoh said, go, take your families, take your things, just get out of here. And you can imagine if every firstborn in Egypt had died, how he would want to get rid of them. It took 10 plagues, with the last one being the death of the firstborn in every Egyptian family, to get Pharaoh to come through these compromises and let the children of God do what they wanted to do. And if it took that much for him to let the children of God go, let us not be deceived into thinking that it's going to be so easy for us to get the devil to let go today. I believe the devil is using these same four compromises. Go ahead and worship, but do it here in the land. Don't need you giving up the world, just stay in it. Oh, you don't like that? Okay, go, but don't go very far. Stay out there where you can see all this that's going on back here. And if you've just got to go, at least leave your families or leave your things. And Satan is saying, I'll get you back if you'll just leave those. We live in the world. And you've heard it said so many times, we're not to be of the world. We at this point cannot just get away from everything that's evil, but we can get away from participation in it. And we can get away from condoning it. And we can do everything that we can to have Christian families and have people that'll help us go to heaven and encourage us. And we can put our things in focus, whether it's a house or an automobile or a good job or money in the bank or whatever it is, we can put our things in focus to where we realize that they are to help us worship and serve God, not to hold us back. And when we do, when we overcome these compromises and we give that which is first to the Lord, Matthew 6:33, and we give all to the Lord, Matthew 22:37-40, we'll be able to come out of the bondage of Satan and live in the wilderness of a Christian life headed for the land of Canaan that nobody can take from us. But if we compromise, we're doomed. I urge you not to compromise, but to turn your back on Satan and give your all to the Lord. You need to be baptized into him tonight if you need to come back to him. Don't compromise like Pharaoh wanted them to, but give your all to the Lord. And if that means coming now, do so as together we stand in sing.
Power in the blood.